Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, First Canto, Chapter 5, Text 21. Tvam Atmanatmanam Avehi Amogadrik Parashya Pumsa Paramatmana Kalam Ajam Prajatam Jagata Shivaya Tan Mahanubhav Yudayo Mahanubhavad Mahanubhavad Yudayo Digandyantam Digandyatam. Twamat Manatmana, no, Twamat Manatmanam Aveyamogadrik Twamat Manatmanam Aveyamogadrik Parashya Pumsa Paramatmanakalam Parashya Pumsa Paramatmanakalam Ajam prajatam jagata shivayatan. Ajam prajatam jagata shivayatan. Mahanubhavad budyado diganyatam. Mahanubhavad yudayo diganyatam. Twam atmanatmanam aveyamogadrik Parashya pumsa paramatmanakalam Ajam prajatam jagata shivayatan Mahanubhavad yudayo diganyatam. Others? Tvamatmanatmanam avehamogadrik Parashya pumsa paramatmanakalam Ajam brajatam jagatashivayatan Gudrick. Ajam prajatam jagata shivayatan. Vaishnavis. Any brave Vaishnavi want to attempt to chant this difficult verse? No? Okay. Twam, yourself. Atmana, by your own self. Atmanam, the supersoul. Avehi, search out. Amogadrik, one who has perfect vision. Parasha, of the transcendence. Pumsa, the personality of Godhead. Paramatmana, of the Supreme Lord. Kalam, plenary part. Ajam, birthless. Prajatam, having taken birth. Jagata, of the world. Shivaya, for the well-being. Tat, that. Maha Anubhava, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Ayudhaya, pastimes. Adiganyatam, described most vividly. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This is Narada Muni speaking to Srila Vyasadeva. Your goodness has perfect vision. You yourself can know the Supersoul, Personality of Godhead, because you are present as the plenary portion of the Lord. Although you are birthless, you have appeared on this earth for the well-being of all people. Please, therefore, describe the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, more vividly. Srila Vyasadeva is the empowered plenary portion incarnation of the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. He descended by His causeless mercy to deliver the fallen souls in the material world. The fallen and forgotten souls are detached from the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The living entities are parts and parcels of the Lord, and they are eternally servitors of the Lord. All the Vedic literatures, therefore, are put into systematic order for the benefit of the fallen souls, and it is the duty of the fallen souls to take advantage of such literatures and be free from the bondage of material existence. Although formerly Srila Narada Rishi is... Although formerly Sri Narada Rishi is his spiritual master, Srila Vyasadeva is not at all dependent on a spiritual master, because in essence he is the spiritual master of everyone else. But because he is doing the work of an acharya, he has taught us by his own conduct that one must have a spiritual master, even though he be God himself. Lord Sri Krishna, Lord Sri Ram, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all incarnations of God, accepted formal spiritual masters, although by their transcendental nature, they were cognizant of all knowledge. In order to direct people in general to the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, he himself, in the incarnation of Vyasadeva, is delineating the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Omagana Tamananda Shajan Anjana Shalakaya Chakshut Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamayam Dadati Swaparantikam. So, does everybody in this room know what the meaning of the word plenary is? I pronounced it plenary. Okay, you get. Yeah, well, the reason I asked that is because about a year ago I didn't. Archita had to straighten me out. And 3 or 4 months ago, Deva Krishna found out when he got ganged up in a Bhagavatam class in Denver, when he thought it meant partial. I thought it meant partial. He did too. And this morning, Srimad Mahatsam, he's not here. When I asked him, oh, here he is. He thought it meant partial, so it's complete. It means complete, full. So when you're hearing that Srila Vyasadeva is an empowered plenary portion, it's full, it's complete. It's not, you know, it's not the lesser, it's the greater. That's kind of an important point. Prabhupada uses that word, plenary, in both the translation and in his purport. So Vyasadeva is a very extraordinary personality. And just from that first sentence, we can understand he's a empowered plenary portion incarnation of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who descends by his causeless mercy to deliver the fallen souls in the material world. So it sounds like, at least from those two sentences, minimally he's a nityasiddha, living entity that's descending into the spiritual world, that's empowered. But when you go to the very last sentence in the purport, it becomes pretty clear, at least to me, the way I understand it. It says here, in order to direct people in general to the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, he himself, who's the he referring to? I think he's referring to Lord Sri Krishna. He himself, in the incarnation of Vyasadeva, is delineating the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Would everybody agree with that? In order to direct the people in general to the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, he himself, Krishna himself, in the incarnation of Vyasadeva, is delineating the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. So it seems to me that what Prabhupada's saying here is that, you know, Krishna incarnates as Vyasadeva, and Vyasadeva is a plenary portion. The portion thing, my understanding of that is that just like you have Ram, Nisringa, Varaha, they're all Krishna in the sense that just like, you know, that's that verse in the Brahma Samhita, Departure Eva Hidyasantunam Abhupecha, you know, there's the candle, and with that candle you light all the other candles, but they're all candles. But, you know, there's certain qualities, certain features, pastimes that Krishna manifests that Ram doesn't, or Nisringa doesn't, or Varaha doesn't, you know, which are present in Krishna. So, like that, Vyasadeva is a so they're portions. You know, they're not like these other incarnations are not manifesting all the qualities, all the pastimes, all the everything that Krishna did. But, you know, they're Krishna. And I think Vyasadeva, at least the way from this purport, the way Prabhupada's describing him, fits into that category. He's a, you know, on that level. Well, okay, I'm going to get to that. Okay, in the Vishnu Purana and in the Vayu Purana, this is kind of discussed a bit, and it's explained there that actually in every Kali Yuga, there's a Vyasadeva. Okay, generally, according to the Vayu Purana, generally that Vyasadeva is an empowered jiva, but this particular Vyasadeva, I've mentioned this in previous classes, according to the Vishnu Purana, this particular Vyasadeva is not an empowered jiva, but is a plenary portion of Vishnu, an expansion of Vishnu. So, and from the way Prabhupada's presenting it here in the purport, it really does sound to me like, at least Vyasadeva, as he's being described here, is Vishnu Tattva. Okay? So, as I was coming to, his ontological position is extraordinary. His life was extraordinary. He was the son of Parashara Muni and Satyavati, and he was born on an island that was mystically created by his father for that purpose. He grew up immediately. You know, I don't know if that meant instantaneously. I can't remember. It's been a while since I read the past one. But he gave his mother a benediction that he said, "When you need me, just think of me, and I'll come." And that happened. Sometime later on in his life, she did call for him like that, and by that mystic process, he was able to appear there. He went back to that island to write Srimad Bhagavatam, and when he wrote the Mahabharata, he entered into a deal with Ganesh. You know, he wanted to, because he needed somebody to scribe. So Ganesh, they made a deal that he says, "I will be your scribe, and I will compile the Mahabharata, which is 100,000 verses, but you have to describe it continuously. if you stop, then that's the deal's off. So when he did the Mahabharata, it was like at one go, 100,000 verses at one go, and Ganesh all wrote it down. So, you know, there's other aspects. It's all extraordinary. He's an extraordinary personality. And, you know, he is the author of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So as I was walking in the door this morning, Archita asked me, of course, she said, so what part of the universe are you going to take us on a tour of this morning? And I thought to myself, I said, actually, no. We don't need to go on a tour of the universe. The universe needs to come on a tour here. We've got everything. You know, where do we need to go? We have books written by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here it is. Actually, there's even a picture. I just did this, but I didn't remember. There's a picture like that in the Bhagavatam itself. Let me see if I can find it really quickly. Maybe it's not. Oh, no, here it is. Yeah, you see? This picture. I can relate to that. It's probably you're too far away to see it, but in the top of the picture is Vyasadeva holding up the Bhagavatam just like this. And those, here's a book written by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These books were written by God himself. Srila Vyasadeva is, you could say, God. And he wrote these books. And if that ain't good enough, he used a pure devotee as his instrument to elaborate upon the message, you know, and make it even more user-friendly, make it, you know, more clear and understandable than even he originally presented it, and that was Srila Prabhupada. See? These books are written by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, inside, outside, backwards, forwards, upside down, upside right. This is deity. You know, there's several anecdotes where Prabhupada was asked, Prabhupada, why are you reading your own books? I mean, the one that stands out most in my mind happened in India. Prabhupada was preaching to some life members or something. He was preaching in Hindi, actually, as the story goes. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Bhagavat were there. I think I told this in a previous class, or maybe Sunday feast lecture. But they left the room. And Prabhupada called them back in and said, why didn't you stay here? He said, well, Prabhupada, you know, we had other things to do, and you were preaching in Hindi. So he said, no, you should stay anyway. It's not all Hindi. And how are you going to learn how to preach? He said, do you know the shlokas? And they said, well, you know, we're very busy with management. He said, no, what about, you know, this one? And he quoted some shloka, very famous shloka, Tesham Sata Dyuktanam, and they didn't know it. And Prabhupada said, and then Prabhupada gave him an instruction. He said, you know, actually, you should read these books. You should study these books very carefully. He said, even I study my books. And they were kind of like, what? He said, and do you know why I study my books? Because I didn't write these books. When I sit down to write these books, Krishna comes and dictates each and every word to me. I'm paraphrasing. I can't remember the exact what they said. And they might not be remembering exactly what Prabhupada said. But that's the gist of it. That Prabhupada, and that wasn't just, you know, that's not an isolated incident. There are more anecdotes like that. You know, where you hear, you know, in the memories, you hear different devotees on different occasions, and the same, Prabhupada was giving them the same information, that I'm just the instrument. I was just the instrument. Don't hold it against me. I sit down to do this. It's just like Narada Muni here is telling Vyasadeva, meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and then go for it, and describe the pastimes. You know, he's not saying that, well, you know, he had the pastimes, and you write them down. Prabhupada's writing these purports is, there was an aspect of that there. Prabhupada is like in samadhi. Prabhupada went into samadhi. I mean, he did consult the commentaries of the previous acharyas, and he did have the translation there, but, you know, it's, Prabhupada went into, he's meditating in trance on Krishna, and Krishna's giving him the words. You know, he's giving him exactly. So, once again, point being, these books are written by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, Vyasadeva and Prabhupada expanding upon it, and it's all perfect. And, you know, there's verses like that. This Bhagavatam is all perfect, it's all blissful, it's all successful, it's the person, you know, like that. So, getting back to the point, why do we need to go on a tour of the universe. The entire universe needs to come here. We have books written by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're sitting in a room where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present in his Archa-Vigraha form. Right? And this, you know, here it is. This is 100% Krishna. Here is 100% Krishna on three different altars. Here is 100% Krishna, a pure devotee, in his, in a form of a plant. But it's 100% a confidential pure devotee of Krishna. So, you know, why do we need to go anyplace? They all, the entire universe needs to come here. Right? And actually, you know, formerly people had that kind of intelligence, and they did that. Like if you go to India, still to this day in India, it's like a, how would you say it, almost the burnt remnants, but it's a, but if you go to a place called Tirupati in India, still to this day, because there's a deity there called Balaji, which is a famous deity of Lord Vishnu, right? Venkateshvaram is also the other name. So there's still, on any given day, you're not a holiday, just any given day, you go there and there's like 20, 30, 40, 50, maybe more. I mean, it's hard to say how many pilgrims are there. They don't just, you know, hop out of bed and go. A lot of them walk up this hill called Tirumala Hill, which is, I can't remember, you know how many kilometers that is? It's a hike. They hike up the hill barefoot, and they get up there, and then they stand in a line, and many of them stand in line for hours, like even days. Yeah, he's confirming. I didn't want to say that until, you know, I didn't want to exaggerate, but days. You know, if you're just like a regular old ordinary Indian person coming, they'll stand there for a couple days just to get a darshan. And you know how long the darshan is? Seconds. It's just seconds. You just get in front of the deity, and then they have some like chokidars there, or, you know, security guards, and then you get to see the deity and offer your prayer and make your, you know, request or whatever, and then they move you on. That's it. Right? But they'll stand there for like, let's say, 2 days. Just for that, you know, opportunity. So, in other words, it's still there, and that used to be even more so. If you turn back the clock, I mean, you still have something like the, what's it called, the where Prabhupada went once, the Kumbh Mela in India. So, in other words, people, human beings, are supposed to do that kind of thing. That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to use their legs and their bodies to go to these places and, you know, get darshan of the deities, or use it for spiritual benefit. But now people are so bewildered, they don't know what to do with themselves. You know, I'll just mention this quickly and then move on. But I've been doing a lot of book distribution in the Santa Monica area, and particularly around the Santa Monica Pier. And I feel like on a regular daily basis, I'm experiencing a perverted reflection of what human beings are supposed to be doing. Just like, you know, I went to this place, I went to Tirupati, and I saw all the people, you know, going on the pilgrimage. Every day, I'm there, and you see the people, it's like they're mesmerized. It's like, there was once a movie called Time Machine, and part of the plot was that, you know, the guy went forward in time and back in time. Anyway, and he went forward in time. The human race was kind of, became very subjugated by these, like, almost like Rakshasa kind of beings. And when they would blow this horn, it mesmerized them. And then they just, you know, whatever they were doing, they just kind of stop. And they just kind of like zombies, they would just walk towards this cave while the horn was blowing. And then when it stopped, the gate went down, and they were all eaten by the Rakshasa, kind of the Morlocks. And it's almost like that. It's like some sort of horns, and these people are just, you know, they just, 12 o'clock comes, and there they are, just filing down the pier, you know, just, and you can see them. They're just walking and looking around and maybe buying this to eat or that, and then they go down, and a half hour later, they come walking up the pier. And it's just all day long, right? It's just, and what are they doing? Nothing. They're just walking down the pier because they don't know what to do with themselves. You know, they don't know what to do with, literally. I hope I'm wrong, but I think I'm right. More and more human society is getting to the point people don't know what to do with themselves. You know, they've totally lost the understanding. Jagya tat kamanon yatra loko yam kamabandhana. Jagya is meant for, karma is meant for jagya. You know, work is meant for the satisfaction of Vishnu. But Natevadu Svagatimhi Vishnu. They've totally lost that understanding that, you know, the goal of life is Vishnu, and some Siddhi Adhari Tosanam, and the perfection of life is to please him. So they're just like
bewildered.
They're completely bewildered. And it's amazing because, like, you know, to watch them, you could see that for at least for a devotee or somebody who's, like, trying to be a devotee, to watch them, it really looks like zombies. What are they doing? They're just marching down the pier, marching up the pier. But when you talk to them, they sound, I mean, they can talk to you like an ordinary, normal person. But Mayaya Pratigyana, which means intelligence has been stolen by illusion. People's intelligence has been stolen by illusion, and therefore they're just prakriti kriyamanani. They're just kind of being controlled by the modes of material nature and just wasting their human form of life. They're wasting their time. They're wasting their energy. You know, this is their vacation, obviously. They're not working. They're there on a holiday. And this is what they do with their holiday. They just come and they walk down the pier, and they walk up the pier, and then they walk down the beach, and they walk up the beach, you know. And to what benefit? But anyway, so that's what I'm saying. So that, you know, getting back to the point, we don't need to go on a tour of the universe. The universe needs to come on a tour here. The only reason we go out there is to help them, give them these books which were written by God Himself, and then elaborated upon by a pure devotee of God who's empowered by God, who's being used as an instrument of God to produce these purports, to give him this, to give him the opportunity to make some use of the human form of life, which is very rare, very, very rare to get a human form of life. And they got it, and we're their only hope, really. I mean, not we in the sense that we have the books. And we can take, and here's a Srimad Bhagavatam. Here's a Bhagavad Gita. Here's what you're really supposed to be. Read this book and learn what you're supposed to be doing with your human form of life. Otherwise, Shrama Evahi Kevalam. Otherwise, you've totally wasted it. And there's no guarantee you're going to get another one. See? So it's, yeah. So we're in a very good position, and basically, all we have to do is, sometimes, there's this conflict about, not conflict, but some little tension. We have to be innovative in how we present Krishna consciousness. Okay, but we have everything. It's already all, it's completely perfect. You know, it's what we have is complete. The books are perfect. The program, the temple is perfect. The program is perfect. Everything's perfect. We have to plug in. At least that's the point I'm going to make this morning, okay? I've made it before. I hear other people make the same points again. We have to plug in. To the degree we plug in, to that degree we're going to realize how perfect everything that we've been given is. And and whatever imperfection we're experiencing, it's due to the fact that we're not plugging in enough or correctly enough. There's no defect. There's no defect in the process. There's no defect in the philosophy. There's no defect in the process. Okay? Both are perfect. We got the perfect philosophy, right, given to us by God Himself. We have the perfect process given to us by the pure devotee of God, who is His instrument, completely His instrument, and it's Prabhupada who gave us this program exactly as it is. So it's all perfect, and we just have to plug into it. Now, somebody might think, well, I'm plugging into it. You know, that a devotee might be a response. I'm plugging into it, but it's not working. You might be thinking you're plugging into it, but not. And I'll give you an example of that. In the course of the years I've been doing Sankirtan, I've attempted to share or show devotees how to distribute books. Not that I even know myself, but I said, you should do it like this, And then the person would, and we go over some lines and some techniques and this and that. And then the person would come back and say, it's not working. I said, well, let me watch. And I'd watch what that person, I'd have them say to me what I taught them. And they wouldn't be doing the same thing. They thought they were doing the same thing. I told them something and they thought, I'm doing it just the way you told me. But then when I would hear them or watch them, I could understand, no, you're not. You forgot to do this and you did this instead of that. And you see, so that's, we tend to be an illusion like that. We're thinking, I'm doing it. Well, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be. I'm doing it perfectly. But maybe we're not. So you got to evaluate yourself, and if you might be a good idea to have somebody else ask somebody else, get some feedback from somebody. Knows if you're not feeling like you're making progress, that something's happening, that you're making some progress in the right direction, then ask some devotee who you're watching and you feel, this person definitely has got to be getting some higher taste or getting some realization because I'm inspired by, somebody you feel inspired by, ask them, talk to them, and you know, kind of see what you might be doing wrong or what you need to do, you know, to be more successful. That's a good idea. Because you probably, this is saying you judge a process by the result. Okay? So in other words, if there's a devotee who you are inspired by, you can understand that, and that because if they're doing like some sort of outstanding, extraordinary, exceptional service, that doesn't happen by accident. Right? Incredible, extraordinary, exceptional service doesn't happen by accident. See? So in other words, if you take shelter or try to get the association of that person, you're gonna learn something. You're gonna be helped. You're gonna be benefited. And it's really important thing to do that in devotional service, to be able to appreciate the outstanding service of other devotees. And actually, if we're not able to do that, you know, if like when somebody does something outstanding, extraordinary, exceptional, and we don't appreciate it, that's envy. That's actually being envious. And by doing that, we're cutting our own throats, and we're going to actually be we're contributing to messing up the movement. You see, it's important to be to not only it's important to try hard to advance ourselves, but it's also important to appreciate the outstanding service of other devotees, and not just appreciate it, not just mentally express that appreciation. It's important to express that appreciation. That's an important point. There used to be a Broadway musical called Happy Hunting. Amla Bhakta Maharaj might remember that. It's back from his era, 1956. But there was a song in that Broadway musical, Mutual Admiration Society. We belong to a mutual admiration, like that. I can't remember much of it. But that's the idea, that you know, this should be a mutual admiration society. So simultaneously, we're striving to, you know, to be the best possible devotee we possibly can, and even competing. Prabhupada was into competition. I just read because I received this email from, I can't remember, even some Prabhupada organization, you know, and there was a letter was from Prabhupada about in Chicago about how, what is the use of a society of weak men? And as Prabhupada was pointing out, competition is important. It's a fact of life. You can't bring it out of the picture. Competition is going to be there. So, yeah, we're competing. Everybody's competing to perform the best service, to please the spiritual master in the best way. But simultaneously, we have to be appreciating. See, you can do both. You can do both. If you have this, like, once you understand this idea of mutual admiration, you know, we're striving to be the best servant, but simultaneously we're cultivating this attitude of appreciation and expressing appreciation for the outstanding service of other devotees. And if we do like that, then things go smoothly. It's non-envious. That's the non-envious way to do it. And this, it's really important to do this. As I said, otherwise the movement will not develop. We won't develop in the right way, and the movement won't develop in the right way. I'll give an example, okay? You know, like for instance, on the weekends we hear the Prabhupada appreciations from, and that's nice, right? But, you know, it's also important to hear about the later day pastimes of Srila Prabhupada. The later day pastimes of Srila Prabhupada are the activities of his sincere, dedicated followers. I'll give an example, and I'm glad I can do this example because the person who I'm going to use in this example is not here. About a month ago, Ananda Kirtan was at a music festival, and he distributed 480 big and maha big books in one day, including a set of Srimad Bhagavatams, and collected between $1,400 and $1,500. And like, that's amazing. That's outstanding. See, that should be, how many knew about that? If you knew about that, raise your hand. See, like, you know, two or three other people in the room, but, you know, we should all know about that. I mean, that's a pastime. You know, that's, that you got to be empowered to do that. Anybody who's gone out on book distribution, knows that that was like, that was no ordinary occurrence. See, so something like that happened. I mean, once again, it's good. I enjoy it, going there on Saturday and Sunday and hearing devotees talk about when I, you know, I was with Prabhupada and Prabhupada, I did this and Prabhupada said, it's good. It's not good. It's great. It's wonderful. But this should be emphasized too. These are the later day pastimes of Srila Prabhupada, how he's empowering his followers, his sincere, surrendered followers, to do amazing, wonderful things. And we should be wanting to hear about those things. You know, they're very important to, you know, glorify that. And because that's what Prabhupada would want. I think Prabhupada would be more pleased about, you know, us kind of being absorbed in how the movement spreading and, you know, and who's successful and hearing it and wanting to learn about how they're successful and et cetera like that, than just hearing about some other things which, you know, really aren't as important. They're transcendental, but not quite as important. If, I mean, for those of us who were here during the time when Prabhupada was physically present here on Earth, we know what his mood was. Spread the movement. You know, I mean, everything was, all the instructions are there, but like the, you know, the overall thrust was, the overall, spread this movement. Do everything. Follow all the instructions I'm giving you. But above and beyond all that, just spread this movement. That was a big part of it. So Prabhupada was really, and, you know, I think maybe we just heard it in class the other day that somebody was saying that, you know, Prabhupada, oh no, it was in that same letter I read. Prabhupada, he liked the scores. He wanted to hear the book distribution scores. That was enlivening to him. You know, when he was there in Vrindavan, right at the end of his life, you know, so many devotees came to see him and, you know, different things were going on and Prabhupada was, yeah, okay. But when Tamal Krishna Maharaj came in to read him the Sankirtan results, according to Tamal Krishna, that was the only thing that Prabhupada really kind of, somehow he seemed to get some special energy. He would sit up and he said, this is giving me life, you know, so that's really important to remember that. Yeah, and we have to, you know, try to stay focused on that. Like I just heard this morning that ISV remitted $500,000 to the BBT last year, which is amazing. That place didn't even used to be a temple about 15 years ago, right? I mean, it was nothing. It's only within the last 15 years that you know, it even became a temple. And now they just remitted, has a temple ever remitted $500,000 to the BBT in the history of the North American BBT? Huh? And not in 3 decades. I mean, like, that's amazing. That's amazing. So, you know, sometimes we might be walking around thinking, yeah, Krishna consciousness is kind of not doing so good in America. Nonsense. How does a temple remit $500,000 to the BBT if Krishna consciousness is not doing so? It's certainly doing good in some place. So anyway, so, you know, we should be really eager to find out more about that. How did they do it? What are they doing? What are they serving for prasadam in the morning? I mean, I'm sure it's a lot more than that. But, you know, wow, that's incredible. And also, so when it's, so, you know, when we're, we should understand it's a good sign when we're interested to, and when we're enlivened to hear about the success of other devotees and, you know, their accomplishments, that's a good sign. That's a sign that we're making advancement in devotional service as well. And, well, I mentioned ISV and I mentioned the Nanda Kirtan. I'd like to also mention we're fortunate to have a temple president that has his head screwed on right. And despite what everybody else is doing, his personal appreciation, he stays focused on, you know, our book distribution goals. And, you know, this, you've heard from the announcements with 20,000 Bhagavad Gitas. That's because, you know, Srivas Prabhu that's his thing. That's his baby. We kind of go along for the ride. But he's the one who, you know, gets a lot of those donations to make that possible. And organizes others to do so. So, you know, we're fortunate that we have a temple that is focused traditionally, historically speaking, and traditionally on the importance, you know, of book distribution. And we went a little bit down last year ourselves, but that's okay. We're going to come up again next year. We're not finished. Can anybody see the clock? I can't. 8:18. Okay, so I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Okay, no problem. So today's the Martin Luther King Day Parade, another a great opportunity to plug in, you know, 3-4 hours of solid kirtan. And it looks like it's a nice, warm, sunny day, so hopefully we'll see everybody there. Thank you. Gantarat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
So if I can have your attention just for a moment, for those of you that are driving, if you need to know where we're going to be or if you're just going to the program, if you're walking, if you park at the end of the parade, this is from the end of the parade, that means you're going to be walking east on Martin Luther King Boulevard. So that means at the end of the parade, you're going to be walking east towards the beginning of the parade. And when you walk towards the beginning of the parade, we're going to be located on Dinker Avenue, D-E-N-K-E-R. Now, this is important because you're not going to see us right on the corner there. You're going to have to walk down Dinker about 3 or 4 blocks before you're going to see the cars. So this is very important. So remember that. If you park where the parade ends, right, that means you're going to be walking towards the beginning, which is east, that way. That's east. That's, yeah, you're walking, yeah, you're going that way, okay? So if you're doing that, then it's about 4 blocks past Western Avenue. If you hit Western Avenue, major artery, you can't miss it. Western runs east, north and south, goes north and south. So you'll see Western Avenue. 4 blocks past that, going east, you'll get Dinker, D-E-N-K-E-R. And then you hang a left on that street and go down 4 blocks. Otherwise, you won't find us. I think it's like you turn left. Sorry, you turn left. Yeah. Left. Turn left. Sorry. So please remember that. Okay? Yeah, we have the temple van going. I don't know who's driving. You can drive? So Brigo Padi Prabhu will be driving the passenger van. You can hop in there till it's full. And you know, nine you can leave 9:30 is fine. 9:30 is good. Oh. Oh, you're not. Oh, I'm sorry. We're right there. Sorry. Misinformation on my part. We're right there. That's what he just told me. Okay, we're right there. Okay? Dinker and Martin Luther King Drive.